cities we saw in the Atlanta area didn't anywhere come close to the kinds of massive civil disobediences that we saw in other places. I guess a hallmark in Georgia, and I frankly don't remember exactly the year, but was the integration of the University of Georgia by a black male and a black female, who subsequently went on. One became a doctor, and the other one is now a PBS reporter. So they were able to get into school, and they've become very successful in their lives. But it was a very tense time there. And we still have that in society. That's something that's always going to be there, unfortunately.
In the early 60s, what other types of historical events were occurring at that time?
Well, I guess one of the more significant ones, because it impacted the presidency very much, was the difficulty that we were having emerging with Cuba. Fidel Castro had been a rebel leader that had performed a coup in Cuba and taken over the country, and was rapidly embraced by and supported by the communists in the Soviet Union, who started supplying him with weaponry and so forth. And there was a period of time in about 1962 when it was detected by some of our aircraft that Russian ships were delivering missiles to Cuba, and this 90-mile-away threat that we felt was certainly something we couldn't contend with. And so President Kennedy made a decision that he would deal very firmly with it, and immediately sent Navy ships, our own Navy ships, down around Cuban waters to effectively blockade Cuba and turn these ships around. This set everybody in the country immediately to thinking that we were going back to war again, that this would be the war that we would have with the Soviet Union, and that Cuba would be attacking us. And it has led to the last 20-plus years, 30 years, really, of tension between the U.S. and Cuba. But that was a very significant point in history during that blockade period, and which was followed by an aborted effort to overthrow Castro with some expatriate Cubans who had left shortly after he took over. It's known historically as the Bay of Pigs invasion. It was very, I think, ill-conceived and certainly poorly executed attempt to move in and overthrow Castro. And it probably led to his strengthening during that time period. But that was a very significant point in our history.
At that time, was there a greater sense of trust in the president's decisions and plans he wanted to execute among the American citizens?
I think so. I think that I've always made a distinction between the presidency and the president. The presidency being the office and the everything that surrounds the office as far as the leadership potential and so forth, and the president as the person. There's always been a historical a great deal of support in the country for the presidency, and we have taken great issue at times with the president. Again, I think this is somewhere where television has played a tremendous role in the way we view the president and our attitudes about the president, and the vocal nature that we sometimes take up in dealing with our own feelings about the president, which, again, can be separated from the presidency. So I think there is a big difference between those two concepts, between the man and the office.
And also at this period, was there a great fear of Russia and what they, you know, their influence on our country and going to war with them?
Well,
similar to what you could classify as the Red Scare, was that still
going on at that time? There was a great deal of fear on the one hand, because we felt like that they had the opportunity to attack us directly in the United States, and secondarily, we still had so many troops in Europe as a part of the NATO organization, and the concept in America was built up that we were the stopping force to keep communism from spilling over into the western part of Europe and subsequently around the world. And as we have seen historically, they exported communism in different parts of the world, and virtually all have failed now. Well, they really have all have failed as a political concept. But there was a constant fear and concern about the Soviet Union and their ability to directly attack us in this country.
How was the Soviet Union at that time? Did you feel a real direct influence from them? Was it like something that you thought about a lot?
No, I can't say I really thought about it a lot. Again, in the early 60s, mid-60s, I was developing a part of my military career, and so it became probably more important to me than it did for some others. But we were in the media very conscious of what the Soviet Union was doing, and when they were building new weapon systems and moving their troops around, and it caused a great deal of reaction in the general population over here. So there was an ongoing concern about the Soviet Union and their leadership.
What was the country's attitude concerning morality, like sex education, abortion, homosexuals, etc., during the 50s and 60s, and how would you compare that with the morality of today?
I don't think there's any comparison. They're just so diverse and so different now. We rarely heard the word homosexual. We rarely heard of anybody doing any kind of drugs. I don't recall even being aware as a teenager that there was such a thing as an abortion, so it was something that was just totally foreign to me. And we certainly see all of those things coming into play now with drugs and homosexuality. And I think, again, with the demarcation line in 1964, which for me, again, was taking prayer out of the schools, you started to see a dramatic change in the philosophy of education, the approach to education, and people in general's attitude about what they would allow to be taught. So that, to me, was kind of the crossover line, and historically speaking, it was about 1963-64 when that ruling came out of the Supreme Court. I think that also started the downward trend to discipline in the home as well as in the school, and we're starting to reap the horrors of that and what's happening now. I mean, there are so many schools, from my own perspective, that are out of control in this day and time. So many kids and families that are totally out of control because of the lack of discipline. And it's all manifested itself from the point of a loss of moral purpose, I think, to a large extent. And I think it's had a dramatic effect. And television and radios and movies and all the other things that we're witness of today play into that.
Was the fight over the issue of prayer in the school like the fight over abortion is today? I mean, was it that intense?
No, as I remember, it was not that intense. It was certainly discussed, debated, and cared about, but it was not something that I don't think people really conceived the ramifications this far in the future of what that decision would have wrought on America. I think it was devastating personally, and I don't think that anybody during that time had any concept of what it might mean.
So do you think that the average American almost wasn't aware that that was what was happening, that prayer was actually being removed from the school? I mean, do you think that's what the majority of the people wanted? Or
no, I don't think it was what the majority of the people wanted, but it was an issue that perhaps the majority of the people either didn't understand or didn't care to get involved in. I was, you know, fairly young during that period of time, and my political and social consciousness was not nearly as attuned as it is today. So I just consider that to be a watermark, but I can't give you any really more specifics about why.
Did the family unit seem closer at that time, and were mothers spending more time in the home?
Yes, it was during a time when the two income family was really not required. I think in a number of cases today it is required in order for families to make ends meet, but you just didn't see that many women who worked outside the home. They had their families and they stayed there and in the home rather than go out to work. So there was a decided difference. And kids had parents to come home to when they got out of school, and they were there and so forth. So there was a big difference.
Do you think that the civil rights movement spurred women on to seek more independence and more civil liberties themselves?
Maybe indirectly it did, yeah. It's possible. I mean, it certainly opened up for everybody to see many avenues of approach to gaining, in quotes, civil liberties through the courts. So from that perspective, I guess you could say it was a precursor for a lot of things we see today.
If you would, tell me about the period of time leading up to the Vietnam War and the mood of the country during the war itself.
Well, Vietnam, of course, was a country that many people even today still couldn't identify on the map, but it is a country that had been torn with revolution for years and had bounced around between the French and the Vietnamese people, and finally they kicked the French out, and they were going through a revolution, and they had asked for U.S. help with this, and sort of towards the end of Dwight Eisenhower's tenure in office as president, he sent some advisors over to Vietnam. They were military advisors to help develop their military. This was expanded by John Kennedy and greatly escalated by Lyndon Johnson, and subsequently ended our involvement by Richard Nixon in the mid-70s. It was a time in history in America of great divisiveness. It was sort of a demarcation point for many other social things that occurred later, but it was a time when we were in the throes of the civil rights movement on the one hand. It was a tremendous upswelling upheaval against the war in Vietnam, attacks on military individuals, attacks on draft boards, throwing of blood on draft records, citizens of the U.S. leaving to go to Canada to keep from being drafted. It was the first time in our history that we could consider it to be a political war, because the troops, in my estimation, never really had the opportunity to do what they needed to do to be successful in that war effort. Whether we should have been involved or not is, I guess, historians will look at for many, many years. But we were, and it was a bad venture because it was so politicized. Particularly regretful was when the troops came home, how they were treated. They were treated like they had done something bad, and they have always been instruments of policy and not makers of policy. And they were spit on and cursed at and beaten up, and even today there's still a very bad feeling in some quarters about Vietnamese, about Vietnam veterans, and you can see that in their own eyes, the way they appear during the Veterans Day celebrations and so forth.
Do you think that that war has caused a sense of not wanting to be involved in the military in a way and affected possible future wars?
I think it took some of the prideful quality out of service. I've always considered service to be a privilege of citizenship, not a right of citizenship. And there's a big distinction there in my mind. I think that there was a time when it was very prideful to be a part of the military, and the families took great pride in the fact that they had military members in their family. Certainly at the end of the Vietnam era, that had completely diminished. To some extent, it was rekindled during Desert Storm, but there's no way to compare those two conflicts at all. It's just not anywhere near the same thing. But I think it did have a great detrimental effect on the way that we view the military.
In closing, do you feel that the period of the 50s and 60s is a time that you would like to go back to?
Well, I think there are some aspects of it that I would want to go back to, but I mean, there are many, many good things about today, many developments and technological developments and so forth that we've seen in that 30-year period between the 60s and 1960 and now. But so as far as actually wanting to go back, no, but there's some aspects of the lifestyle and people's attitudes that I would like to bring forward rather than to go back.
Well, I thank you very much for your time.